Welcome back! Yes, sorry it's been a while.
I know.
But then we're coming back with some really good stuff.
Yes, yeah, we've been busy. So thanks for being patient with us, as always. Happy Pride Month.
Yes, happy Pride Month.
We wanted to do an episode because of Pride Month, and this is a topic that we wanted to explore and we haven't been able to, so we're gonna do that today. But let's do a little check-in, a very quick check-in, because again, we have a long episode ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so how have you been?
Been good. I feel like I'm sunburned. I keep touching my face and like, yeah. But I went to play picketball with my uncle today. That was really fun. It was like, you know how like when you do workouts, you get really tired, but like when you do a sport, like a ball sport, like when you do like tennis or like badminton or something, you get like the kind of exercise is so different than just like working out on your own.
Yep.
And I'm so tired. But everything mm-hmm. else is fine. I'm just exhausted like every day. And I just have very busy weekends too, so it's fine. Everything is fine. I have therapy tomorrow, so I'm excited for that. But not much.
Yes.
Yeah, not much is new. Same old, same old.
Yeah.
How about you, Summer?
Just adult life, I feel like.
It's so sad, yeah, right? Like, okay, it's not sad, but like, I've been having so many conversations with people about being in your 20s and how it's such a weird time because you're just kind of exploring things. Everyone's on a different path. And then my cousins were like, when you hit 30, it gets better because you'll be in a stable career, job. Like, I don't know. Things will be – you'll be more clear about, like, your life. And now is just not that time.
Interesting.
I know.
I thought, like, you're going to say that, oh, when you get to 30, it will be worse.
No, yeah, because like in your I'm almost 25, right? Like next year I'll be 25, and that's weird. Oh. I was like, you feel like you'll have your stuff figured out by, I don't know, everyone's like 20s is this like young, you have fun, and you know, but
I don't have fun.
I know, like I'm just like, I don't know what I'm doing with my life. Like there's just so many things that aren't settled. Like yeah
I think it's really hard. Like, maybe we should do an episode about just us navigating our early 20s.
Our early 20s. Oh my gosh. Almost mid 20s. Honestly, right now, my life.
I know. It's weird. And honestly, for me right now, I sometimes just feel like I'm surviving and just trying to find happiness.
Yeah.
I don't even know. What does it mean to be happy? Can I be happy?
Yeah. Like,
I just have like random, like, existential crisis sometimes.
Like you want to be fulfilled, but it's like, how do you get there? Like the road to get there seems so far, and it's like, when I get there, will I be fulfilled?
Yeah, exactly. Like after I get there, like then what's next?
Yeah,
am I actually gonna be happy?
Yeah, that's a whole other episode.
That's a whole other thing that we can talk about. But talking about fulfillment, I feel like doing this podcast and just talking about something that's educational and meaningful does make me feel more fulfilled and happy in life.
Yeah, exactly. I think I think mid-20s has given me a perspective of work and like fulfillment through work, and it's just like so important to find a job that you enjoy, because you see those people more than you see like your family or even like friends. So
I know.
If your job,
well, I see avatars.
Oh, true, true. Yeah, if your job doesn't give you fulfillment, then it's like, I don't know, maybe we can do a whole other episode on work too.
Yeah, that's, okay, we should do
anyways,
that.
Anyways.
Okay. Anyways, let's dive in. So,
wait, you didn't give your update.
Like you said, well, my life is just like same old, same old. But I get to highlight, so I get to see a lot of like high school friends and also college friends and caught up with a lot of them. So it was really nice. And I also went to a bar for the first time, like in San Francisco. That was fun. It was cool. I just feel so old because I got like super tired the next day and I still had work. And I was like,
yeah, I feel
dying.
Oh, God. But okay.
But yeah.
Yes, let's jump
Okay, let's dive in. So, I'm going to talk about LGBTQ+ representation in Hong Kong media. So, first of all, we kind of want to discuss what does the LGBTQ+ culture look like in Hong Kong. So, in general, I feel like in Hong Kong, it's still a very conservative community, and there are a lot of widespread stigma against the LGBTQ+ community. And if we look back at the history, same-sex marriage between men was only decriminalized 31 years ago on July 11, 1991. And when decriminalization of same-sex sexual acts took place, the legal age of consent actually differed for heterosexuals and homosexuals. And this inequality was only ruled unlawful in 2006, which is 16 years ago.
Yeah,
which is not that long ago. And then after that, there were still sexual offenses that only exist for homosexuals or which carried greater penalties for them. And this was only ruled unconstitutional in 2019, which is really, really recent.
I didn't know that. That is wild.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it went, I remember like the case going all the way to the highest court. Like, do we call it Supreme Court in Hong Kong?
I think it's the highest level.
High court, yeah. And then, although homosexuality has been decriminalized for almost 3 decades now, conversion therapy is still not formally banned in the city. Set Zhang, who is a survivor of conversion therapy. And in recent years, there have been reports of such programs being discreetly offered by conservative Christian groups and other organizations. There are currently no legal protections against discrimination on the grounds of sexual orientation and gender identity, making it difficult to tackle cases of harassment, particularly in schools and workplaces. And I feel like hearing all about this, it just goes to show how, like, institutionally, the Hong Kong society is still very homophobic. There are little to no protection towards the LGBTQ+ community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, obviously, we were talking about how recent these things were, like, either decriminalized or deconstitutionalized. Like, it's mind-blowing to me that it took so long. But also, I feel like in my experience, the LGBTQ+ or, like, being, you know, not straight, it's not really talked about in Hong Kong that much, yeah, like, or even at all. And I don't, mm-hmm, I just remember seeing people going to parades or, like, festivals and stuff. But other than that, there hasn't been much things or much presence or their presence when I was growing up. But
yeah, I agree. And I feel like a lot of the reason why these progress for the LGBTQ communities only happened in recent years, exactly because this issue is very unseen in Hong Kong. A lot of people talk about it. And when a culture is so conservative, people also don't feel comfortable to come out. I feel like a lot of people are still in the closet, like, hiding it. And because it's such a, quote-unquote, like, kind of small community in Hong Kong, that even lawmakers doesn't feel the need, mm-hmm, to pass any law to protect this group of people. And it's just become a vicious cycle of, like, you don't have enough representation, then there's no law to protect you, and then not enough law, then people are scared to come out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And more recently, public attitudes are shifting. Obviously, we're not there to witness this. But in 2020, a study by the Chinese University of Hong Kong found that 60% of the 1,000 people that they polled believe that there should be laws against discrimination based on sexual orientation. And it increased 56% from a previous similar survey conducted in 2016. that's like half. That's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And Professor Shun, the assistant professor of the gender studies program and founding director of the sexualities research program, said that there were several reasons behind declining opposition towards LGBT plus legal rights, including increased contact with members of the community, issues, and recent court cases related to LGBT plus rights.
Mm-hmm.
And 10 years ago, there were no large-scale public events in Hong Kong organized by the LGBT plus community. But since 2005, they've been able to gather in an annual International Day Against Homophobia. Also, the abbreviation is IDAHO, which is kind of funny. But it's a march in Hong Kong.
Oh, uh-huh.
And in 2008, there has also been pride parades. And these events have encouraged people to come out instead of concealing their sexual orientation. And there have been more people in the public eye who have come out, including public figures ranging from singer Denise Ho and Anthony Wong to Hong Kong's first openly gay legislator, Raymond Chan. I think Denise Ho is like one of the most relevant to us.
Mm-hmm. Dennis Ho and Anthony Wong is also very Wong Yuming. He's an older generation artist, and I think they're very outspoken for the LGBTQ+ community. So I think it's good that we're making advances
slowly but surely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and so while researching, I also found this organization called Pink Alliance. It's a nonprofit organization in Hong Kong, and their mission is to advance dignity, acceptance, and equal rights for LGBT plus people in Hong Kong through community engagement and public education. And in 2010, they launched their very first IDAHO.
IDAHO.
Oh, it's different. It's IDAHO. it's different from the one before. So this one is the International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia, Intersex Phobia, and Transphobia, which is more inclusive than the one mm-hmm. before. And they mm-hmm. also have like a festival thing called Pink Season, where every September until November, it's like they have themed events, and it's over 5 weeks. So it's like September to November, which is pretty cool. But I think they stopped doing that since COVID. Or even before.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably, like, since COVID or, like, before, during the protest in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
I think I remember, like, it was still happening in 2019. But then it was kind of, like, meshed together with the political protests and movement at the time.
I remember... I would see people post about it on social media, mm-hmm. like the march.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then, yeah, I feel like it's really great that we're making advances. And I feel like because for the younger generation, we are more in touch with global media in a sense that like a lot of people in Hong Kong also watch Netflix. And as you know, like on Netflix, I feel like there are a lot more like LGBTQ representation,
yeah,
and honestly not even just Netflix but just Western media in general have more LGBTQ plus media representation, and as younger people see those representation, it becomes more, it kind of helps to normalize being gay.
I feel like being gay in Hong Kong is like more looked down upon than like being bisexual or being a lesbian, because there's a certain level of expectation of masculinity that I feel like Hong Kong or even still. Asian men are like held to a higher standard of, and I've never seen a couple, like two male couples holding hands until this last time I was in Hong Kong. I was so excited because I saw a gay couple holding hands and I was like, wow.
Aww.
it's slowly but surely we're getting there.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And cool. So we also want to dive into like why there are more conservative culture around the LGBTQ plus community in Hong Kong. And there are a lot of factors that we found out about. And the first one is the traditional Confucian values against homosexuality. So although Confucianism doesn't condemn homosexuality directly, it emphasizes harmony, virtue, tradition, and filial piety, which encourages deep respect for one's elders and ancestors. And within the confines of filial piety, a man's role is to continue the family bloodline while women care for the family. And under such moral codes, some Hong Kongers can feel an underwhelming need to conform, to be accepted and respected by their loved ones and society at large. For example, it's generally assumed that a gay person cannot get married and have children, and thus is unable to procreate, which may greatly disappoint their elders. For some LGBTQ plus individuals, this makes coming out to their family challenging, so they choose a more passive method known as coming home.
That just reflects how old school and traditional Hong Kong people still have on like gender roles. But I feel the pain for individuals who feel like they are like letting their family down or like disrespecting their elders just by being who they are, because I feel like that's a very relatable theme in a lot of struggles and a lot of intergenerational trauma too, is that you feel like you have to please them and you owe them and you want to like be this perfect person for them, like you don't want to let them down. Mm-hmm. And it's such a guilt and like pain you can't really explain. Like
I feel like, yeah, because a lot of times in Chinese family they put more emphasis on the happiness of the family collectively instead of the happiness of an individual.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so when the happiness of the family is prioritized, I think a lot of times like your own wants and what you need and love needs mm-hmm. to be sacrificed in order to be like quote unquote the good daughter or son.
Yeah, and like it's so sad. I feel like it's easy for people to be like, just do what you want, you know, it's your life. But it's like when you're put in that position, it's really hard to like justify it in your brain because you love your family so much.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't imagine how much harder. And you're scared. Mm-hmm. I feel like it is hard, I think, for a lot of people, you know, who are LGBTQ plus and don't feel safe to come out to their family or friends. But I think the filial piety like definitely adds a lot to that. It's a lot of pressure.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
yeah, and another factor that has contributed to this conservatism towards the LGBTQ plus community in Hong Kong is the widespread Christian values during British colonization. So if you didn't know, Hong Kong was colonized by Britain for 99 years, and we were returned in 1997 back to China. And so because of their colonization, Hong Kong's laws are greatly influenced by Christian values, especially after the government introduced compulsory education in the 1960s, and that led to a boom in church-run education. I went to a Catholic school, so, and there's a lot of like religious mm-hmm. institutions. And after that, around 50% of the city's primary and secondary schools were run by churches, and these schools cultivate and teach dominant Christian moralism concerning same-sex marriage and homosexuality, and essentially that God does not approve. I'm actually really interested to hear what schools have conversion therapy or what churches have conversion therapy, because I haven't experienced that, and I feel like as someone who went to Catholic all-girls school, the religion wasn't that dominant. Like, not – like, I don't think a lot of people were religious who went to my school.
Mm.
It was just, like, a good school, so people wanted to go, and that just happened to be religious. But now I am sus. I'm like, did they ever participate in conversion therapy? Or like, we never even talked about the LGBTQ plus community at all. But my school had a lot of tomboys, which is also a whole other topic that we should talk about because it's really interesting. But essentially, they're like females who, I wouldn't say identify as males, but they like dress like males and they like cut their hair short and they mm-hmm. are more like masculine. Or like when mm-hmm. they get in a relationship with another female, they are like the more masculine role.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just such an interesting dynamic now thinking about that, because these people are obviously openly tomboys, you know, like you could tell mm-hmm. from their appearance, like they would come off, they wanted to dress like guys and appear more, I wouldn't say appear more masculine, but yeah, they would like dress as guys and, you know, cut their hair short and stuff. So that's such an interesting clash, like in that
yeah.
school system.
In that school. Yeah. So yeah, I'm actually curious then, like, at your school, did you learn anything that is like related to religion and homophobia?
We had religion classes.
Homosexual.
Yeah, we had mm-hmm. religion classes, but it would, a lot of it would just be solely based on like the Bible. Like, what are the Ten Commandments? Like, we had to memorize that. What else did we do in Bible class? I don't really remember. I think we just had to, like, read the Bible and, like, yeah. But we never touched upon, like, homosexuality. I think because it was an all-girls school, we didn't really mm-hmm. have any conversations about, like, relationships
mm-hmm.
or dating. We didn't even have, like, a sex talk or anything. Like, they weren't, like...
Yeah.
They weren't, like, God doesn't want you to have sex. So it was very... It strayed away from controversial things, I think.
Mm-hmm. So it's very, what's the word? Like, mystify? Like, a lot of things that are surrounding sexuality.
Yeah, like, it wasn't talked about.
Because we don't talk about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it wasn't until even, like, yesterday when I was talking to my boyfriend about, like, the topic of tomboys that I was like really trying to dissect it and understand like its place and its role in Hong Kong. And I'm like, wow, after so many years, like, never talked about. And even I've never had conversations like this about my friends' like identities, because I have tomboy friends like from school and I have never ever talked to them about it, or like about like how they feel, or because it's so common, I feel like, in Hong Kong.
Mm.
Anyways, another factor of conservatism in Hong Kong is because of our handover back to China from Britain. So after Britain imposed all these Christian values, we were handed back to China. And after our handover, there was a lot of talk of threat for state censorship and diminishing rights of expression. And so a lot of Hong Kong queer media artists were bombarded with the repeated vision of a death sentence. So for example, the threat of censorship and the introduction of the Article 23 in 2003 in Hong Kong legislation. And so what the Article 23 is Hong Kong shall enact laws on its own to prohibit any act of treason, secession, sedition, and subversion against the CCP, but basically, like, any bad about China or any...
And the government.
And the government should be censored.
Yep. And I just want to add here that, like, with the new governor that is going to...
The new chief executive.
With the new like chief executive that is going to be in office, actually next
in July first.
Yeah, next month, and also the fact that there are no more Democrats in the Legislative Council. I know that a lot of people are already pushing to pass the Article 23, and it's getting more and more support from the Hong Kong public. So I'm pretty confident that, like, this article is gonna come back in the next few years.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. Mm-hmm. But this is also, like, Article 23, I feel like, is a big, huge basis also for the 2019 protest, too, and with the national security law. But
yeah. No, this article was, like, they want to pass it in 2003, but then, like, millions of people protested against this law. My parents actually did too. So they took it back. But now, because of the movement in 2019 and 2020, and also the national security law, which is very similar.
It's basically the same thing, I feel like.
To be honest.
Yeah.
And then now they're saying that, like, we should bring this back to, like, for the reason of national security and also to what, like, realize the principle of
they already one have nation, it though it's like systems. Literally the same thing. But yeah, so because of that, on a regional level, Hong Kong has lost its competitive edge in terms of Asian queer culture and politics. So Taipei has actually become, like, one of the largest areas for Pride, and in 2010, 50,000 tourists attended its annual Pride parade, and it has also become known as a site of progressive civil politics for sexually marginalized populations. Like, they approved gay marriage, same-sex marriage. So a lot of, I think I've seen people in Hong Kong go to Taiwan just to get married, and yeah, even mainland Chinese cities. Is that true? So Beijing and Shanghai have overtaken Hong Kong as sites of gay consumption. I feel like that's not true.
I feel like Shanghai might. It's possible. So after, like, talking about, like, all these factors and a general understanding of how the LGBTQ plus culture looks like in Hong Kong, we can start, like, diving into how media plays a role in it. And before we give you all the information, I want to raise the question of, like, how do we think media play a role in shaping the LGBTQ plus culture in Hong Kong?
Yeah, well, I think even growing up, right, like, I never saw any LGBTQ plus representation in any of the shows I watched. Even, I think at that time, there wasn't much in the West, like, shows in the West as well. So I didn't grow up watching anything that had any representation. And it's never talked about. You wouldn't even have conversations. Like, even with friends that I know are, like, in the, like, LGBTQ plus community, we wouldn't even initiate a conversation about it. Or I never initiate a conversation about it, about how they felt being, mm-hmm, like, openly, like, gay in Hong Kong. So it was just never a topic of conversation. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I have a very similar experience where I didn't really see a lot of movies that talk about homosexuality. And, like, I just couldn't think of any out of the top of my head. Mm-mm. But I do feel like when I was doing research, like, we're finding a lot of TVB clips that portrayed LGBTQ community very badly. And I think that just kind of, like, subconsciously can affect how we talk about homosexuality. And even when I feel like even when there are shows that are not directly related to homosexuality, like, I remember seeing male actors on screen who will play, like, they're, like, a male character, but then, like, act a feminine way.
They call them...
And whenever... Lying.
Yeah, like, I think we talk about it. Lying, yeah.
Yeah, we talk about it, like, in some previous episode. Basically, that means that they're weirdo and, like, femininely weird. So I feel like a lot of times those are also very badly portrayed on TVB. And that can, like, kind of just, as a kid, like, I'm just absorbing all of those ideals and perspective about what masculinity and femininity and even homosexuality means. And a lot of times those things are seen as gross and not normal.
You know what's interesting about the people calling men who dress up as women lying? It's like a whole industry now. It's like drag queens. That's basically what they are. Like, I mean, they would portray them in a bad way on social media, right? But like, there were actually people who wanted to express themselves in, you know, wearing female clothes and stuff. And I know, actually, I think Hong Kong has some sort of community of drag queens too.
Yeah, they do.
So,
you know what, that's actually reminded me of, I think it was a research I did for like one of our previous episodes, mm-hmm. where there's a very popular drag queen in Hong Kong. Mm. I don't know if we can search up their name, but the thing is, the catch is, I think he's a Westerner.
It's more accepted.
Yeah. It's more accepted, and people think that, oh, like, guailo, like, it's a guailo, yeah, like, it, like, it's acceptable for Western foreigners. I remember kind of, well, I think it was a while, I was watching that movie on like the Pearl Channel on TVB, and this movie came out in 2005. It's called Brokeback Mountain, and
it's Jake Gyllenhaal.
Jake Gyllenhaal and
Heath Ledger.
Wait, so it's not?
So it's not Leonardo DiCaprio.
Okay, sorry.
It's okay, somewhere they all look the same.
Anyways, I was just like, I think a lot of times, even when we looked at Western media and seeing homosexuality on screen, we are more acceptable to them because it still feels distant from our own. I remember when I'm doing a research and this film developer was talking about how, like, oh yeah, we're more acceptable when we're watching Western movies, and we're more, people now are more acceptable of the idea of like homosexuals, but as long as they're not happening to the people who are close to us.
Oh my gosh, yeah, that just reminds me of the same concept of not in my backyard. Like, oh, I'm accepted. You know how like when people used to segregate like the black community from where like white people would live, and the white people would just be like, oh yeah, I welcome, you know, I'm not racist, but I just don't want you to live next to me, like, kind of thing. Oh, it reminds me of that. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. And when we were talking about like our own experiences, right, like it made me think of comments that my parents or like my friend's parents would make to my tomboy friend. They wouldn't say it to them directly, but even when I was like hanging out with a tomboy friend, they'd be like, oh, I don't remember what they would say, but they would react differently if I said, oh, I was gonna go hang out with like my male friend. And I think parents sometimes just assume that if you spend time with them and you get close with them, like, you will be converted to liking them.
Exactly.
And it's like, it's not, that's not how it works. But I would just remember.
That's not how it works.
I would remember
that. Yeah, no.
And we would joke about it, like a meme back then. But it's like, wow.
Yeah, I think it really just affected our perception about like being gay or lesbian or just being a part of the LGBTQ community in general. It's so stigmatized and it's seen as like a bad thing. So kind of like redirecting back into the media landscape for the LGBTQ communities in Hong Kong, there are actually a lot of like hurdles into making LGBTQ plus films. First of all, like casting is super difficult because most actors don't want to ruin their image or reputation. I think there are like two sub reasons under it. I think first of all, there are not a lot of like celebrities or actors that have came out to be homosexual. So it's really hard to find those people to cast for those roles. And second of all is that like it's the image and reputation problem where even people who are heterosexual, they would not want to play a homosexual role because that might ruin, quote-unquote ruin, their image or reputation. And I don't know if you know this, I think Leslie Cheung, he actually came out as bisexual.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, at some point. And I think at the very beginning of his career, there was just a lot of struggle of whether, like, there are a lot of talks in, like, the society about whether he is a part of the LGBTQ community.
Mm.
But it also, like, probably took him a very long time to come out because, like, maybe the agents or just his company is worried about his image or reputation. And I think that would be the same thing with, like, Dennis Ho, which is, I think, like, I remember the year or, like, the years after she came out, like, that's when her career started to go downhill too.
Yeah, I think I remember watching a documentary of her saying that she was, like, her mental health after that was really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And she wrote, like, a lot of songs during that period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like it's just really sad that, like, a lot of times after celebrities have come out to be homosexual, like, they're not supported and accepted by the public. The public anymore. It's even sad. Though they were super popular before that.
Yeah. It's sad that they have to cater their who they are to the audience, to the public, when your career, I guess, depends on it, which is also very different from what we're used to in the US, because there's been so much more representation. I mean, I can't say too if it's accurate or not because I'm not in the community, but, like, even on Netflix, like, there's been so many more new shows coming out that hire gay actors to play gay roles. And Hong Kong is just so far behind with that.
yeah, we're really far behind in that. Yeah, and I think because of a lot of these, like, entertainment companies, all they really care about is
money,
profits. It's money, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for, like, branding and, like, image reputation is very important to them. And when there are people who wants to actually produce an LGBTQ plus topic films, a lot of times they have a hard time to get finances, to get fundings, because no one is really willing to put money into producing those kind of films. And we actually found two clips from a film producer to talk about this issue. I'm going to pull the clip out.
At the beginning, I really wanted to find actors who is, like, with a bit of a sort of, like, name, because, like, the subject matter is really difficult to get finance. I approached some, like, sort of, like, more famous actors, but most of them were, like, action stars from the 60s or 70s. So they were really sort of, like, careful about their image, and they were not really interested. And then finally, that, because it was really difficult.
And then there's another.
I think in order to find finance to make an LGBT movie in Hong Kong is as difficult as it was 20 or 25 years ago. The only way you could do it is possibly to get big stars who are willing to do it. And maybe it's easier now if the younger group of actors are more willing to do that. But in terms of the audience, I'm not sure there are that big an audience out there who are willing to watch an LGBT movie still, you know. And maybe sometimes for them it's easier to watch something like a Hollywood production rather than a local production. Maybe it's not so close to heart. But the society itself is certainly more open than 20 years ago. People in general are more acceptable of LGBT movies, or, you know, just socially as well. As long as that they are not, you know, happening in their families, I guess. For me personally, I rather watch these movies and all this. I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Oh, that was a lot there that he said.
Yeah.
But it's so true. I'm still trying to process it in my brain. But I am wondering, like, he was saying how people don't really pay attention to it. I wonder if this is just because, like, the population of people who are LGBTQ plus are just so little? Or is it because, you know how he was like, Hollywood films that portray, you know, like gay relationships, like people are more willing to watch it in Hong Kong and society is more accepting. But when it's a local film and it's close to heart, people are less willing to produce mm-hmm. or even like participate and watch. I wonder if that's just like society unwilling to accept the changing of times or even like accept these old gender roles like are changing. That's so interesting. And it made me think about that one TV show that on Viu TV with Anson Lo and Eden, where they played a gay couple. Mm-hmm. People really just, I feel like that was so popular because people liked them as actors. Like people fangirl over them. not because they're playing gay characters. I feel like every Instagram post that I see when that show was airing from people who were watching it was just like, oh my gosh, I'm tuning in to watch him and these two men are good looking. Mm-hmm. So I wonder how much that did for representation, that TV show making them a gay couple, how much that did for representation versus like you're just using these popular faces. I don't know. I want to know what's going on in that director's room or like the casting agency. That's interesting.
Yeah, I just feel like it's really true that people are more accepting of Western LGBTQ films because yes, it's not happening in their backyard and it's not actually like affecting their own lives. Mm-hmm. You know, when you watch stuff happening in another country, has no actual impact on your life. But then
it's like removed.
They can watch a Western movies, but let's say if you ask the Hong Kong public, what do they think about having a gender neutral bathroom in Hong Kong? I'm sure there are going to be so many backlashes. And I think that's because of so many like homophobic ideas already rooted in the Hong Kong society and also just Confucian values in like Chinese culture in general that like is there's like I feel like this is the reality that a lot of Hong Kong people are living in, and then they can watch another reality, but then there's no bridge in between those two to like how do you actually transition into like another set of value, if that makes sense.
Yes. No, because that makes sense.
Yeah. It's like how when I learned about like racism the reason why a lot of people I feel like they're racist is because they have no touch with that community.
Yeah.
Like they don't personally know anyone mm-hmm. from that community mm-hmm. and they see them as foreigners and nothing to do with their lives. And that's when a lot of the fear and like hatred and just misconception can happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's true that they are more accepting though because it's far removed from them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's so weird. That's so interesting to think about.
I'm just rambling.
Yeah, like to conceptualize it in that way. But there hasn't been that good of representation. and there's also mm-hmm. been a lot of misrepresentation on media about the LGBTQ plus community. And so from 1976 to now, there have been 37
TVB rant time.
I know. 37 TVB dramas that featured gay men, and then 20 that featured lesbians, and 10 that featured transgender people. And among them, 70% of TVB dramas involve homophobic plots, which reflects the public's attitude towards LGBTQ plus people. And over the years, prejudice, stereotypes, and misunderstandings about LGBTQ plus people have been systematically replicated and strengthened, which inevitably like cycles into audiences having negative associations. But then because of that, these these companies keep producing these shows.
Yep.
And for TVB, their homophobic plots have four categories, which is wild that you can even pinpoint four categories. But the first one is, in a crime drama involving a homicide, the person would play the role of a criminal that was either suspected or deceased. The second category is someone who appeared as homosexual but turned straight halfway through and fell in love with the opposite sex. Sorry, I'm laughing because it's just so ridiculous. The third one is people are infatuated with this person as the object of admiration or even go crazy for it. And the fourth role is that they play a role that appear as heterosexual but is actually using the opposite sex to create a smokescreen and hurt others in order to cover up his homosexuality. That was a lot.
Honestly, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Of all, like, that kind of concludes the LGBTQ representation I got growing up.
Yeah, either it's this or you get none.
Yeah. Oh my god. It's so messed up. And it's just, I don't know, it's really sad, but then it's kind of just,
yeah,
funny.
It's
not funny, but then it's like, what's the word?
It's like so
ironic.
It's so bad, it's funny. Like, there's nothing you can do other than laugh at it. But yeah, it just reminds me of,
none of,
like,
this makes sense.
I know. And it just reminds me of them, like, casting, like, in our last episode, putting a Filipino worker into the script, but, like, stereotyping it. And it's always negative. Or even Southeast Asian representation. It's just so bad.
Yeah. It's, like, I think it's laughable and funny because it just shows how ignorant they are.
Yeah.
Ignorant and privileged and just living in their own bubble.
Yeah.
But, like, unfortunately, that's the media company that controls the culture of Hong Kong.
Yeah. And to make this harder for you listening, we're going to play a clip, an example of this terrible representation.
Yeah. So we pulled, like, kind of a scene from one of the problematic TVB show, and to give y'all some context, so there's this character, his name is Huang Jiale, who wanted to have sex reassignment surgery, and psychiatrist Fang Zhongxin deduced that he did not have the desire to be transgender since he was a child but just hated his current self. It turns out that Huang Jiale was sexually assaulted when he was a child, so he wanted to change sex. After Huang Jiale recovered and discharged from the hospital, he decided to retaliate and was later detained on suspicion of murder. Yeah, so I guess this falls under the first category of what you just described. In a crime drama involving a homicide, played the role of a criminal, suspect, or deceased. Alright, so now we're gonna just play a clip from the show and then we'll explain what they're talking about afterwards.
Yikes.
So,
the first clip that we played was basically him at his psychiatrist's office, and the main character, or the character who wanted to have sex reassignment surgery, was in his I don't even know what pronouns to address, in their psychiatrist's office, and the psychiatrist was basically like, what trauma you have that has led you to want to have sex reassignment surgery to escape from your problems, mm-hmm. basically. And there's just so many levels of problematic, because this man is implying that it is a choice for him to want to have the surgery or to be transgender, like, and they always blame it on mental health. Even the way that there was a scene that we didn't play, but he was like, the main character, the character was very distressed and like screaming and had to be held down by nurses and doctors. They just always portray mm-hmm. them, like they link their sexuality some way to them being mentally unstable, or that is mm-hmm. a choice.
Yeah. And then the second scene that we played in that video was actually when Huang Jiali, he was threatening to murder the person who sexually assaulted him as a child. And yeah, they just kind of like portray them as criminals again, murderers. And I think it further stigmatized the LGBTQ plus community, that, you know, they are scary, mentally unstable, and they can be the criminals of the society.
And it seems like the whole reason this character is even in the show is to drive the plot in some sort of way, be the villain, when they could just have a character that's transgender and like have the process of them, you know, being going through the sex reassignment surgery, but no.
Yeah. It's just terrible.
Yeah. And
is this what we get?
Yeah. this is the representation. But there have been very small cases of positive representation. And we have two examples. So the first one is Happy Together. It's a film that came out in 1997. The two people who star in it is Leslie Cheung and Tony Leung.
Woo!
Yes. And the kind of plot of this movie was set during the time after the handover. So Hong Kong was in a time of uncertainty, and it dealt with Hong Kong's independence. And it follows the relationship of Fai and Po Wing as they explore their relationship, their love, and they try to make a living as foreigners in an alien land. So they actually went to Argentina in the movie. And I know, and they filmed in Argentina too, but this movie, I think the director, I think it's Wong Kar-wai's film.
Yeah, it's Wong Kar-wai.
And he's like one of the biggest filmmakers mm-hmm. in Hong Kong during the golden age of film.
Mm-hmm.
But he was trying to depict like the stress and uneasiness that Hong Kong citizens felt at the time after being handed back to mainland China. And it was actually regarded as one of the best LGBTQ films in the new queer cinema movement of the 90s, even though the director didn't consider this film as a gay film. He says that, I don't like people to see this film as a gay film. It's more like a story about human relationships, and somehow the two characters involved are both men. Normally, I hate movies with labels like gay film, art film, or commercial film. There is only good film and bad film. And I think his mindset to the way he made this movie is why it's so good. It's because he just saw them as people. Like, he didn't see them.
I know.
At that time, too, like, snaps to him. He didn't mm-hmm. cast it specifically because he wanted their gay identity to play like a huge role. Like, obviously that's part of the experiences that the characters go through, but he wasn't trying to like surround the plot of them being gay, you know?
Yeah, like he wasn't trying to reinforce any of the stigma
mm-hmm.
of what a homosexual person will look like.
Yeah,
it's just normal people,
and it was a
living their life, navigating relationships.
Yeah, and it was such a raw story. And so why people liked it was because it was the same thing that we're talking about. It wasn't explicitly about two characters being gay. He was able to show all these different kinds of personalities of these two characters separately and together, versus I feel like a lot of films in Hong Kong or even movies, they just make their whole personality them being gay.
Mm.
And it was very refreshing at the time. Like, it was probably one of the many, many few, like, representation for the LGBTQ plus community, mm-hmm. even though their relationship in it was, like, terrible. It was, like, a toxic relationship. The relationship that they had in the movie was just, like, toxic. And
really?
But it's very raw. Like, it's real. Like, it happens. Mm-hmm. Also, fun fact. Tony Leung agreed to do the film on the basis of a fake script. And this is interesting to what we were talking about before, because they can't even get actors to come, like, play gay roles. And he only learned of the requirement that he had to film a gay sex scene after arriving in Argentina for filming. Which is very interesting.
Wow. Yeah. Tony Leung.
I know. I watched, well, I didn't watch the sex scene, yeah. but I did watch some scenes where they were making out.
Ooh. Sorry. I want, yeah. Y'all, if y'all haven't checked out this film, you should check it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So for me, when I was doing research, I found a film that looks really interesting. And it's called Sok Sok. And Sok Sok in Cantonese, it means uncles. So this is a film that was created in 2019 and was created by the film producer that had the clip about, like, who was making comments about the Hong Kong LGBTQ film landscape before. Anyways, so I think this film actually resembles a lot about how the portrayal is very human and just see them as real people. So this film, it featured two middle-aged men falling in love. Through sharing their personal histories, the two men realize they have more in common than they thought, releasing their true feelings after being repressed for so long by society and their roles as father figures. So for context, both of these two middle-aged men actually have a family. One of them is still married, and then the other one divorced, but still have a son. So I watched this film last week, and I really like it because it featured gay men in their 60s, which is something that I rarely see on screen, not even in Western media, because I feel like the producer actually commented on this too. He was like, when I think about gay people, I always think they are young, trendy, stylish. We never think about our parents or grandparents as someone who has any sexual desire, any romance. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really true. That's even so with true. Western media, whenever I think about gay or lesbian media, I think about, I don't know, Sex Education mm-hmm. on Netflix.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Even I feel like in real life, too, there's a trope of white people, like gay white people, who people think that's what being gay is. But then you take mm-hmm. into account, like, there's other people of color, there's people of different ages, like, that changes it all. But I think when you think mm-hmm. about people who are gay, you just think about the typical white gay man.
Yep.
Or even, like,
yeah, or like
white lesbian woman, you know?
Yeah. And they're all, like, very, like, hippie and, like, so very out there, outgoing.
Yeah, like, you have an image associated in your brain when you, like, think about it.
Mm-hmm. And I'm really glad that this film was kind of challenging our idea of what an LGBTQ person looked like. And like I said, I really like how this film is very real and raw. It portrayed the relationship in a way that makes the audience understand a gay relationship is just like any other quote-unquote normal relationship. In the film, we can see the two men going on dates, they cook dinner together, they also cuddle together, and aww. They Netflix and chill. Not actually Netflix, but then, like, they watch TV and kind of chill, you know?
Oh, cute.
And then another part that they highlight in the film is I can really feel the characters' tension with their family and the pain of hiding who they truly are for decades. Like, these are men who are in their 60s and have son and daughter who are already married. So every part of their relationship between the two men was very secret and private because they're scared of other people and their family finding out. And that goes back to what we talk about, how a lot of times the happiness of the family is usually more important than their own individual happiness. And there's also this fear of like being abandoned by the family that they've established for decades. And then lastly, the only thing that I didn't like about this film is that the actors are actually straight in real life. But I think at the end of the day, that's still understandable because I understand how it is very difficult to find actors for these roles.
Yeah.
So apart from those two films, I also researched a few more films that you can check out if you're interested in LGBTQ films that are created by Hong Kong producer. So the first one is A Woman is a Woman. Second one, All About Love. Third one, Butterflies. And lastly, Tracy. I think maybe we can do like a social media post or like a reels about these films too. So you all can have reference and like check them out. Because these are all better representation of the LGBTQ community in Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm. Is this movie a Hong Kong film? It is, right?
Which one?
Sok Sok. Oh, I want to watch it now.
But the actor, I think he was like in Hong Kong back in the 60s, 70s, and then he went to Taiwan. But this film actually, the main character, the actor, actually got the best actor in Hong Kong Film Festival in 2019.
Oh, they're so cute. I need to watch this trailer now.
Yes.
That is it for this episode.
Yeah.
We unpacked a lot, but let us, if you're part of the LGBTQ plus community and you want to talk to us about this, especially if there's stuff that we got wrong, or stuff that we like said wrong or didn't use the right terms, please let us know.
Yeah, please call us out and we're open to it and we're here to learn.
Oh my gosh, I'm excited. I think we want to do more episodes about the LGBTQ plus community, like drag queens. Oh my gosh, that'll be so interesting to research. Tomboys, I want to research. So there'll be more coming.
Yeah, stay tuned.
Stay tuned. And that is it for this episode. See you next time.